Hello and welcome to the very Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, the podcast about board games, and the people who love board games. Today it's me, Mr. Matthew Lees, joined by Ava Foxfort, and we have got a bit of a strange special episode for you today, haven't we, Ava?
Yeah, that's the plan. Like, you've just kind of sprung this on me immediately now.
Well, you may remember a while ago, there was a podcast to do with like the ideal game night. What would that look like? What would be the ideal game night? Getting everyone together in one room. And I was thinking on my way, wandering around this morning, what about the ideal board gaming commune, right? And I thought, wow. What two people better to work out what the ideal board gaming commune would be than somebody who actually works in the field of doing financial-based commune stuff, Ava, and me.
Sort of.
Yeah. And me, who's seen some arguably ethically questionable documentaries on Netflix about cults. We'll meet in the middle, you know, with our.
This is what a commune is. Exactly halfway between housing cooperatives, which is what I actually do, which isn't quite the same thing as communes.
Yep.
And
murder cults.
You end up with communes.
Bang in the middle. So we are shaking hands across the world here to come up with the ideal board gaming commune. So I'm just going to walk you through where this came from, right? I was thinking about Gloomhaven and Frosthaven this morning, right? And I was thinking about how there's a certain fiddliness to those games, to put it mildly, right? They're a bit fiddly. Have you noticed that? A little bit fiddly. And there's definitely been times where I've been playing them and the fiddliness has sort of been like catnip to my slightly strangled and bedraggled brain, right? Where I was doing one mission which just involved an obscene amount of cardboard upkeep. And I just became kind of a human Excel spreadsheet, just doing it and accounting it as a sort of reaction to stress. And it felt like a balm. And I realized that actually it's like, that's, you know, similarly, I guess, for like the chill out zone for like when you're playing a Euro game, right? And you're just like, I'm just going to quietly fiddle around with cubes. It was like that, but cranked up to like 11 or 12 in terms of being this like, okay, I'm basically like quarterbacking, but in a way that's not actually interfering with anyone because I'm just doing all of the admin that no one else really wants to do.
This is interesting as well because I actually considered this recently. Like for a while, I was wondering whether I would actually have quite a bit of fun like getting Jaws of the Lion or one of the Gloomhaven bits and like almost GMing it for a couple of people rather than actually playing it myself so that like I could kind of like share that thing and get them through their hump of the learning process by just being like, hey, do you know what? I'll do some storytelling and admin. I'll clarify the rules in the way that I understand them so there won't be any like weird ambiguities or anything. But yeah, maybe I could give some people a really nice experience of just like playing this game with zero fuss.
You're not wrong. Like a board game Sherpa, really. You know, and I think that there's some, you know, some real truth to that. And every time I've played games like Gloomhaven or Frosthaven, only one player, usually me, really actually has to understand the rules in a way that with most kinds of games, that would be incredibly frustrating. But with that, it's fine. You just keep playing it and then something happens and someone says, what does that mean? And you go, this. And yeah, it is very much like you're playing Dungeons and Dragons, but no one's the GM. It's just somebody maybe read about a GM once and that's the rules. That's how it all works.
Someone's heard about GMing and about spreadsheets and they're trying to be both at the same time.
Exactly. But being a spreadsheet.
Oh, wow. That's my dream, actually.
Exactly. And I thought about this and I thought, you know what? Being a spreadsheet and having that, like, you know, let's just let Matt be a spreadsheet for a bit.
Yeah, no, if you had infinite columns, just imagine what you could do, Matt.
Exactly. I'd waste forever. It would never stop. But it made me think that, like, yeah, it's one thing to have a game night, and then it's another thing to have a game group, right? Of having a selection of people who you know, you like to play the same things, you like to play in the same ways, and you have that kind of, like, hopefully a good rapport that has everyone excited to play with each other every week. But then what about if you extend beyond that? Like, what does it look like in terms of, like, right, you're now living in a fictional scenario where you're just playing loads of games with people, and how would that work? What kind of divisiveness would you get into in terms of, like, you know, like, who would you have as being like the lead teacher, like the person who is just going to do all the teaching? Is that a thing you would do, or would you take it in turns?
Oh dear. Oh. Are you actually asking that question now, or are you just like warning us of questions
to
time?
Like, I am asking.
This is one of the things that I think is going to be really tricky with this, right? Is that if you start having a lead teacher, then you are on the road to becoming a cult. Like, I think that as soon as it's like one person's job to teach and explain everything that's going on in this place, like, at best, you're running like an executive retreat. And at worst, you're running a like literal cult. So be careful, Matt. Don't start a cult.
Yeah, I mean, you say don't start a cult, but I think that like if I had to choose someone in my commune to be the person who teaches games, I probably would choose Quinns.
Is this us in this commune?
Well, I'm kind of thinking it's us as a baseline, but then we can extend it to other people or other concepts other, you know, whatever we like. That's what I'm using as a framework, you know, write what you know. I see. Listening to what you're saying about how I'm very dangerously on my way to starting a cult, I think you might be, there is a point there thinking about it. Quinns does have a little bit of cult leader energy about him. In a nice way, you know?
Yeah. I think that you'd want a, like, teaching and learning working group rather than things. So this is where we, like, belie all of my, like, the reason why I'm in housing cooperatives is because of, like, connections with the cooperative movement in the UK and anarchist organising. And a lot of the stuff I've done has been built around consensus and volunteering and all of these lovely principles that are really important to me. We're not going to go on too much about that because it would probably not make a very sensible board game podcast. But the first thing I would say is that if you want to not have a cult, you need to have working groups rather than things. And like, yeah, Quinns is so exciting to learn a game from because when Quinns has got the passion for a game, then it is infectious. Like, he's a delight to learn stuff from because he will know the rules pretty much perfectly. He will know what is exciting and he will have picked the like perfect order to explain everything in to make 100%. You excited. If you want to play the game the wellest, like the most like accurately and the most firmly and reliably, then like I would be going,
you
Tom,
want me to teach, you want me to teach
Matt,
it, right?
Yes, Matt,
you want me
please,
to teach it.
Please,
you want me.
Tell
you know,
me. Yeah.
Honestly, the other day it was not ideal. We were trying to play a game in a setting which was a little bit too busy and noisy for it, and it was a kind of campaign-y style game. It was actually a game that was pretty rules light. One of those games whereby, you know, you've got a couple of actions, you do things, but most of the game is going to be rolling dice and reading stuff off of cards, you know, so it's just like, you know, let's just roll the dice, let's just play. And I think Tom looked at me as if I was, you know, completely unhinged when I was like, look, just play, you just do this or do this. And he was like, I don't understand the game. And I'm like, it's fine, just, you know, roll the dice. And yeah, I think it's safe to say that I am spectacularly bad at teaching games unless I've been taught them recently myself. And then I'm quite good at it. Like if I just played a game and someone wants to explain it to me, I could explain it extremely well. But in terms of reading a manual and then conveying the information in the manual to other people, other humans in a way that makes sense, absolutely not. So it's understandable that you're already talking about like, well, actually we need these little groups and committees because that sounds very sensible and healthy, but it does detract from my, you know, Lord of the Flies style vibe of everybody having a job.
Come join my cult. It'll be like Lord of the Flies.
Exactly. I haven't read that book, but I assume it's really lovely.
Yeah, that guy really, really, really knows how to deal with those flies.
Exactly. He's on top of it. Don't worry. Don't worry. Yeah. Just blow into this conch and they all get scared away. Tom is brilliant at knowing the rules. And I think I think I want him as like some sort of rule lawyer backup. But yeah, it's the pizzazz, it's the showmanship of the teaching from Quinns just makes me think, you know what? He's just very strong at it, right? But then the question is that what he would want to do, right? I think it's interesting because there's so many little layers to it, right? I really like doing upkeep only in very fiddly games. If it's a bit of mild upkeep, can't be bothered, not interested. But if you've got loads of little things to slide around and move, I am there. I am straight there. I am into it. I will just do that and watch you play the game. Whereas like time to put the game away into the box, really not interested in that. Time to set up the game, really not interested in that. I get the vibe that Tom might be like, he really likes putting things away. So he could be the putter awayer for the kind of group.
I've met some like really, 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 really like off the deep end nerdy board game collector player types in my time. And like Tom is the only person I know who labels baggies.
Nice.
And I love that. I love that. I love that. You know, Tom's who you want as like your quartermaster, right? Like Tom should be organizing the games, administrating. Neither of us should be doing that because that's just going to be chaos.
And I think he should be the only person who has the key to the locked safe.
The forbidden game zone.
All of the forbidden games, but also the safe that contains all of the other keys that open up the lockers for all the different types of board games and stuff.
There's a lot of security in this commune, Matt.
Yeah, well, there's the guns as well. don't worry about that for now. There's a possibility that in my head it's sort of slowly merging into like a zombie apocalypse as well, but we're just not going to think about that, right?
This is
just
definitely not the conversation I was expecting.
Just linger. Just leave that to linger on the you know the edge of the donut of your imagination.
Okay. The question that I really want to ask with this is like, how are you actually bringing this group of people together? Because to my mind,
that's a great question.
So what we tend to call communes these days, so that it's an umbrella term that covers everything from cults to a bunch of people who've just decided to live together, is intentional communities.
Are you saying that all the people involved in my fictional board game commune have to want to be there?
Yes, Matt, actually that is a line that I'm going to draw.
Well, this is getting very uninteresting very quickly.
I know. Bloody hippies.
Well, I was just thinking that, you know, what happens if Quinns gets ill as the lead teacher? Do we need to have a backup teacher? Do we have a Rodney Smith in a bag? I don't know. I'm just spitballing.
I'm not kidnapping any Canadians for you again.
All right, fair.
Not this time.
Okay.
There needs to be an intention behind this. Like, it can't just be like, oh, we want to get together to play board games, because otherwise you're going to end up in, like, splitting off into factions with, like, a whole wing of the building just being lost to the people who just want to play werewolf over and 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 over again.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There'll be like the party game zone, which everyone gets really excited about, but actually is really resented by like the Euro Cavern. Cavern or Coven? Euro Coven?
Oh, I like that. The Euro Coven.
Oh, no. Maybe there's two different wings. Maybe there's the Euro Cavern, which is a location that one group of Euro fans are in.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Euro Coven, totally different thing.
Yeah.
Like the room for factionalism as this enterprise expands.
Yeah.
Is quite dramatic.
It's the kind of time capsule element that interested me about this conversation. Because, you know, the Euro Cavern is really interesting. First of all, it's obviously a nod to Caverna. And secondly, you know, it makes sense that Eurogamers who are really serious about it and serious about incredibly dry games would end up gravitating towards a place to play them in, which was quite damp, just as a natural contrast to amplify just how dry some of these puzzles can get and how wonderful that is. Whereas the Coven, interesting. I don't know how witchcraft comes into it, but I'm excited to find out more.
There'll be some paperwork on that when you arrive in, but only after you've signed this NDA.
Fantastic.
So we need to have something that unites us. And like, this is the thing that's really tricky, I think. The things that I genuinely would actually quite like to do with something like this is like an away weekend where you're like teaching someone how to play Mage Knight and then ending it with a really big, lovely game of Mage Knight. Or like, maybe this would be how I finally do actually play like a full proper campaign of Gloomhaven, is getting that group of people together. But even these like big chunky experiences, they're finite. They're not going to last forever. They're not going to keep a community in one place. And then it's like, well, what is infinite enough to be like the uniting factor here? And what is the intention going to be? Like, is it all about just learning as many games as possible? Just like pool your resources, buy loads of games, play loads of game, a new game every night. You spend a week playing the game, you spend a day playing the game. And yeah, there's like ritual and structure to it. Or do you try and go for that thing where it's like, do you know what? We are going to like absolutely dominate the competitive Quirkle scene.
Yeah. Is it mastery or is it exploration?
I've never even played Quirkle. Why am I saying that?
It's obviously on the mind. It's understandable. We're having a creative session here.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are no wrong answers. Yeah. There are no wrong Quirkles.
No wrong answers.
Blue Sky Quirkling. I think like the timescale is a fascinating one, right? If you're having a board game retreat, yeah, it's like, who do I want to be spending time with for like a weekend or a week? But with this, it's like, is it a year? Is it a decade? Is it generations of board gaming in the wilderness? And I think that it is interesting how actually in a microcosm, it makes me think about the nature of playing and the nature of division within that and how it would change. You can see very clearly that there would be some people who go, all right, yeah, well, we're going to go and play Gloomhaven. And then after about, like, you know, not even that long, about 3 weeks, the people who are like, ah, no, I can't be bothered with something big like that. We're just going to go and play these light little games. Then having gotten bored of light little things and being like, oh, I wish we were, I wish I'd done that. They've still got a thing going on. At what point did the party gamers burn out and get too old for it and have to start coming into the cave of Euros? You know, is there a natural life-death cycle within this community over generations of people, you know, and it ends up with the elders saying, ah, well, you know, when you're young, all you want to do is play dexterity games. But one day, as you get older, everybody ends up leaning towards the Euros. And the next generation going, shut up, Grandad.
Yeah, no, eventually we all become 18XX gamers.
Shut up, Grandad. I'm going to be Ameritrash forever.
I don't know. It's really hard as well. Like, when you started talking about generations, I couldn't stop myself from thinking about, like, generation ships, right? Like, actually, like, is this how the people in Alpha Centauri got so, the, like, Civ follow-up, is this how they got so divided by the time that they hit that planet? Like, what are the cultures that would spring forth from, like, the eight different factions in the board game generation shift after, like, centuries of passing stuff down, passing rules, passing, like, strange knowledge? Because even just, like, you know, you were there, like, oh, yes, and people go off and they play Gloomhaven. Like, it takes them a couple of weeks. They come back. Everybody in the Eurotunnel is going to be... The Eurotunnel's a natural thing. Everybody in the Eurocavern is going to be, like, speaking their own language, where, like, the words for the parts of Castles of Burgundy are going to have all changed, right? Like, yeah. You know, if you spend an afternoon with someone...
Yeah.
I had a couple of people who I played Castles of Burgundy online with, and we always refer to everything in that game as grabby grabby or placey placey.
Right.
Like, those are the two main actions in the game of Castles of Burgundy.
Yeah.
Like, that happened in, like, a couple of hours effectively, and that's now a part of my lexicon forever.
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking about weeks or months or years or generations, nothing is going to make sense anymore. No, the rule books are going to be remembered for generations.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, I'm freaking out a bit.
I mean, also, you know, you try and go and find your partner and they've burnt out on Boggle. There's a potential nightmare scenario here,
yeah.
You know, which I think we're not skirting around. And I think that's very brave of us, arguably, and we should be applauded for it. But, you know, if you're thinking about the nature of how groups would be shifted by it, I guess it would just be like reverse engineering how the games happened in the first place, in the same way that we look at a lot of designs from around the world and we see them actually, like, you know, as in the book we mentioned tons and tons of times, The Player of Games. You know, games are really reflections of the culture that make them. But then if you did have people just playing those types of games, would that work the other way around? Would it be able to shift the mindsets of those people? And I don't know. I like to think that as somebody who does enjoy playing all types of games, it's that is a part of my broader open-mindedness in terms of being able to, like, enjoyably put myself into different mindsets and different spaces. So maybe within the commune, I'd be a sort of wizard character moving around from group to group going, hello, would you like me to teach you how to play Quacks of Quedlinburg or Tigris and Euphrates? I'm not very good at that one. But yeah, you may well get to a point as well over a long period of time. Who do you send out into the wilderness to scavenge for new components once the old ones begin to break down?
Have we got a steady supply of new games, or have we got a time capsule of a couple of the things that we bought in with us?
It's a very good question. It's a very good question.
Because, like, I kind of worry that, like, you're implying that we don't have access to food.
Well,
if we're having to scavenge outside, and, like,
look,
I don't want to have to eat every new Asmodee release.
Look, I'm still running the budget on some of these numbers, all right? We'll work it out later. But yeah, it's obviously we'll think about food at some point. I'm just thinking more like, you know, if this is like, you know, originally I was just thinking, hey, you know, we're going to have a little commune. It's going to be like, I don't know, 20, 30 people living, playing games. Everyone's going to be satisfied with their own little set of roles, being like, I like doing this. I like packing it away. So that's the person that's going to do all the packing away. Fine. Aww. And, you know, but coming into this conversation, it's become clear that I have been a naive fool and the stakes and conversations are so much bigger and broader I mean, even on a basis of how many people are involved in it, if this is a commune in a true sense and new people can come in, what happens when you get to a point where you've got 200, 300 people? Oh, you would have people splitting off into little groups, dependent mostly on the games that they play, because that's why everybody's there. And then the question of, do we have a finite supply of games? Would you then have game designers moving in and literally, like the bards of, you know, yesteryear, playing to the crowd and designing games for specifically the groups there and what they wanted? Would that further cement the factionalism?
Or break you out of it, right? Like, you know, I don't know. There's so much here. Like, I feel like you're right that we've possibly got a little bit out of hand. I think that you're right. There's a simple question here where it's like, hey, if you lived in a house with a load of people, who would be the people that you'd pick to make sure that you could always have a perfect game night, right? That's a simple question. Whereas once it's like, what forms of religion would form off the basis of which games? And do you need to bring in game designers? And would they then become priests or like iconoclasts?
That's, you know, honestly, I was exactly what I was thinking. I was in my head, I'm not going to lie, I immediately jumped to a mental image of Alan Girding dressed as a sort of medieval priest.
Yeah.
All of the components are worn out, everything's a wreck, and he's just trying to bind society together via the medium of encouraging people who play one genre of game to perhaps play a game that's a mixture of two genres. And then he's called a witch and he's outcast into the wastelands. I think my imagination may have to be put into a jar and thrown into the sea after this podcast, if I'm entirely honest, Ava.
I do believe that is the protocol, yes.
Yeah, I think we've gone through a number of the red flags and it is a case of getting a new imagination.
The thing is, this is just trying to make a convention last forever. Like, if we're talking at a scale that I think we've got onto, it's like, what makes Shucksby such a lovely place? Can you maintain that for long enough? Now, boringly, I think that actually the key thing is you need to be able to feed everyone, right?
This is true.
Because actually, most people can't afford to be at a convention for the rest of their lives because normally you end up having to have, like, difficult food solutions. But like, once you've got to that point, like, you know, we just lock the doors at Shucks. Wait, this is,
yeah, it's you've gotten a bit sinister.
This is
here
not going to go in the advertising material, is it?
You've gotten a bit sinister there all of a sudden.
I've gotten a bit.
It's probably my influence, I'm not okay, gonna lie,
sorry. I'm not actually gonna do that. Yeah, you just got to give people like enough space to get by and enough food, and like the thing that you've got sorted is, how do you keep people occupied now? Like, I don't want a, like, one to walk away from Omelas situation where, like, actually there's, like, a scurrying underclass of, like, board game organisers who are, like, running around and making the things actually happen. And, yeah, I would worry about that sort of thing. But I think I'm just hoping that we've got Star Trek replicators and we don't actually have to worry about the economies and structures of this.
Oh, imagine that. You could just eat as many cubes as you wanted because it wouldn't matter, because you just print more plastic cubes from the machine.
Yeah.
And people would say, don't put them in your mouth. And you'd be like, it doesn't matter. And then you spit them out and conjure up some new ones into reality and laugh at the folly of ancient man and his consumerist days pre-fabrication. I think, like, it's interesting you're talking about the idea of saying, like, basically what we're talking about is having a convention, which is infinite, right? If you choose that as a starting point for being like, what might a community of infinite, of self-sustaining life around games and everyone having the focus of being able to enjoy play, but also to be able to focus on the aspects of play that they enjoyed most, both in terms of the types of games they're playing, but also the types of roles that they're given within those games and around them. What would it look like if you did get slightly Lord of the Flies and say, right, imagine a board game convention like Shucks or UK Games Expo or whatever one you can get into your imagination listening to this. What would it look like if the people within that space, you just gave them free rein to be like, do what you want. Do what you want to, like, make this how you would like it. What would happen? What would it look like, right? Because a lot of these things, because they have to be, are very utilitarian, right? Here is a sea of tables. And that is really fun in small bursts when you're at conventions, right? To be surrounded by this sort of endless shopping center of laughter and games. But if you had control over it, what do you think people as a whole would start shifting it into?
I mean, I think that people would want rooms.
This is it, right? It makes me think people would want, and that's not without getting into all the obvious stuff about people need places to sleep, etc., right? You know, we're pretending that's a separate thing.
We'll ignore that, but like, you do want to be able to separate stuff out more. Like, I can barely handle conventions with the like sensory overwhelm of a room like that for a certain length of time. And yeah, if I'm living there, I want there to be nice soundproof dividers, but then you also want to be able to have that openness.
Like, exactly,
part of this is going to be about structure, right? How do you make sure that people are coming together more collectively more often? You do need to have a house meeting or a team meeting or like space meeting to kind of like work out the practicals, but also to make sure that people are connecting with each other, because they will be connecting with each other, but they also might be starting to hate each other because,
well, this is it, right?
You happen to be stuck in a room with that one guy who will only play one game and absolutely rinses everyone at that game every single time. And it's like, I want you to be able to have that joy, but like, please, can you go to the room with people who like doing that? And then they all set on fire because, yeah.
Yeah, it's Castles of Burgundy Kevin.
Yeah.
Everyone knows Castles of Burgundy Kevin. It's all he'll play. And he says, I'm the king of the castle. And he keeps saying it over and over again until somebody agrees to play him again at the game, in which case you do, and then he wins, and then it all starts over again.
I didn't know you knew Kevin, Matt.
Oh, me and Kev go way back. I played Castles of Burgundy with him once. Yeah. Listen, like, I have the same thought, right? It goes one of two ways. People either think, you know what, I need this to be cozier. Part of that starts with like nice chairs, but again, a lot of it does then end up with a bit of space, a bit of quiet, little rooms, little corners, right? Because that fundamentally is what you would lean towards. Either that, or we get the fire festival style thing where you get some people who start hoarding all of the tables and chairs and, you know, just bringing them over into one corner, and this is the Warhammer zone now, and then, you know, start dragging people into it or whatever. I don't know.
God, can you imagine having to do the logistics of working out how many chairs and tables you need for this thing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I don't know if we should do this, Matt.
I'm having second thoughts about it, I'll be honest. I feel like if we can get Quinns to be the kind of cult figurehead, I think it will still fly. I think it will, you know, eventually it will crash and burn spectacularly, but I feel like it's still got quite strong legs for that initial jump. But no, there is a possibility that this idea is not a good idea. But I think it has ended up being, arguably, I think some people might listen to this and think, well, that was all a bit silly, wasn't it? That was all a bit silly. But at the same time, through having a genuinely quite silly thought experiment, we've ended up coming to the exact same conclusions, really, that point towards why we have so many issues culturally within spaces like tabletop games and board games that should be lovely, right?
Yeah.
We're nice. We have these cozy little things. We have our friends and stuff. And the ways in which that friendliness, if left to its own devices, does result in lots of little disparate groups that just shift off in different directions and then end up being quite cold to outsiders, or, you know, or just outright bigoted, right? Because they have shifted off into some people being in the cave and some people being in the coven. Even if we're not all going to be living together in some sort of hellish, imaginary, endless apocalyptic board game zone, the same principles probably apply in terms of having to have some unifying things, having some things like Alan Girding that exist to bring people together and get people to check in with each other and make sure that everyone's not going to eat each other.
I think I probably would want Alan Girding to kind of not necessarily be the cult leader, but be like the kind of pastoral leader.
Exactly.
Like, you know, the one who's like just like making sure that you have these gatherings every now and then where he's designed a game that everyone can get in on, or like large enough groups that you get to reconnect with people who are outside your little weird board game based reality tunnel. Putting that aside a bit, like, I think that there is an extent to which we have butted up on a lot of the problems that you have in real housing cooperatives, and people that I've worked with, is that it's really easy to intend to start a community, but like, it's work, right? It's not just about like getting a place that's got board games in it and like chucking everyone in there. You've got to remember that everyone needs to be united by stuff, like, and that can't just be loving board games, because it's possible to love board games and still be being an asshole to someone.
It's true. I've been doing that for ages. I'm really good at multitasking. All right?
I think that's really fundamentally true.
I've got it all. Yeah, but I still do think that we should have a system where all of the games are locked in metal lockers, and only person who has keys to it is Tom, and he carries them around on a big keychain, and he comes in and gruffly says, "What do you want?" and looks at you in a kind of frightening way. Because in my mind, he's now like 50 years old because he's been doing this for 40 years. Yeah. Can we at least agree on that?
I don't know. I think Tom works really hard already.
Oh, I'm very glad you didn't agree with me on that, because as we've discussed, it's possible that my imagination needs to be sent back to the shop to be retooled.
I mean, you know, the main thing that I get out of this is that whenever you start discussing communes, the end of the day, like a large part of it is like, well, if we could just make it so that everybody had enough food and space, then like that would be good. And then people could just like make the communities that they wanted to, because they wouldn't be being forced into particular situations. But then it's another podcast that just concludes with Ava wanting to destroy capitalism.
Right, yeah. So you're saying basically, to conclude, that the triangle of needs, you know, the pyramid of needs, is food and safety,
yeah,
on the first layer, on the top floor of the pyramid, right? And then the second floor underneath it, boggle.
Yeah.
And then that's the pyramid.
Yeah.
So if we could just get the top bit cracked, then my vision of the future is just naturally going to fall into place.
Yeah. Or,
because if that's the case, then I'm all against capitalism, frankly. Like if that's all it's going to take, then
I think
let's
so.
Just do it.
What we've got to do is we've got to get society and put it in a large orange tray with a clear lid.
Yes.
Right. And then we've got to get someone really big to shake it up. Shake it up, yeah. Shake it up, and slam it back down.
This is my favorite Spice Girls song.
And like shake it a little to get all of the everyone to fall into the little boxes, and then make letters out of it. Yeah, 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 yeah. Let's boggle.
This has been a really great Shut Up and Sit Down team meeting. I will forward on all of the minutes to the rest of the team who couldn't make it. But thank you so much, Ava, for joining me on this exploratory journey into the future of mankind.
It's been a pleasure. I hope it's listenable.
I hope it's listenable too, because this is a podcast that people can and sometimes do listen to. Thank you very much for joining us on the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast. We will be back next week with a podcast about board games, and the people who play board games. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then just tell somebody you know about it, or maybe somebody you don't know. I don't know. We're not in control of you yet. Keep it boggling.
Bye.